KHUM is freeform independent radio from Humboldt County, California. Learn more at khum.com.
2:30, actually 2:31, and you're listening to KHUM Radio Without the Rules. We're going to get going with Coastal Currents right now. Big thanks to Kokatat for sponsoring Coastal Currents for many, many years. They've been a sponsor of this program. So thanks, Kokatat, very much for all the things you do and for sponsoring Coastal Currents. And a big, giant thanks to Bayside Garden Supply as well. Thanks, Bayside Garden Supply. And a big, giant thanks to Delia, who puts together the show every week. Hey.
How's it going?
It's good. It's good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you in person today.
You see how how warm it is here in Ferndale?
Oh, my gosh.
It's like this every day.
Yeah. Oh, I've been missing out.
Yeah, it's sunny and it's, you know, in the 70s.
Darn it.
It's just really, really nice. So, yeah, good to see you. Happy Wednesday.
Yeah, you too.
I'm very excited about our show today.
Me too. I'm really excited.
Who's our special guest?
Our special guest is calling in all the way from Santa Cruz. His name is Trey Heighton, and he is the film director of the Save the Waves Film Festival. And we thought it would be really fun to have him on today because we are partnering with Save the Waves to put on their film festival here for Ocean Night tomorrow night.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
At the ATL.
Yeah, exactly. And they do so many other wonderful things other than this film festival. So,
sweet. Hey, Trey.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure.
Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for calling in. How are the conditions down in Santa Cruz today?
Pretty beautiful. I'm sitting on the bluffs here overlooking Steamer Lane right now.
Not much, nice.
In terms of the waves, but a really, really beautiful sunny day. So it looks like California's being blessed today.
Yep, that's awesome. Well, that's the case up here, too. So
it's always like this. All the time. Well, Trey, do you want to just start by introducing yourself and giving a little background about what Save the Waves is?
Sure, definitely. As you said, my name is Trey Heighton. I'm the director of the Save the Waves Film Festival, which is in its ninth year this year. I took over from a gentleman named Josh Berry, who was the founder of the film fest. Save the Waves is a global oceanic conservation nonprofit. And we sort of differentiate ourselves from other oceanic nonprofits such as Surfrider by focusing solely on world-class surf rigs. So our big environmental program that most people have heard of is called the World Surfing Reserves. And so we go in and dedicate, you know, basically world-class surf spots to be protected for future generations to enjoy because we feel that those are priceless assets and, you know, those are priceless memories that we get to share with our friends and family, being out in the water and getting to experience these magical moments in the ocean at these amazing places. And we want to make sure that future generations are able to have those same experiences, you know, for years to come. So we just dedicated our ninth World Surfing Reserve this year at a spot called Guardo de Embau down in Brazil, the first World Surfing Reserve in Brazil and the third one in South America. And I'll actually be traveling with the film festival to the 8th World Surfing Reserve, which was dedicated last year, which is on the Gold Coast of Australia. So I'm pretty excited about that big trip coming up next week.
Wow, so cool. So what exactly makes something a surfing reserve?
Well, there's a panel of basically oceanic experts and environmental activists that make up the designation committee for the World Surfing Reserves. And they get together once a year and basically review all the proposals. So anyone on any beach anywhere in the world can nominate their beach to become a World Surfing Reserve. And then that will be reviewed by this basically panel of experts. And as of now, we select one a year that will get the designation of a World Surfing Reserve. So ideally, you know, we like these to be marquee surf spots, sort of destination surf spots. But we consider any beach, and we give precedence to beaches that are under threat of potential developments or other environmental issues. And we do our best to go in and work with locals on the ground to establish a working committee that will be there on the ground to actually know what issues are actually affecting the break. And we just sort of lend them our own sort of legal and bureaucratic expertise to have the local government, state government, at those different levels recognize the wave and the ocean as a really valuable resource that's worth protecting.
I love that. That's so amazing. Do you think you could give an example of one of the reserves that you have already designated, and maybe one of like the challenges that you had to overcome, or some like an environmental issue that that spot was facing, or something that's now protected?
Yeah, most definitely. We've got a lot of success stories in the WSRs. So I'm actually sitting on the bluffs of the World Surfing Reserve of Santa Cruz right now, which is near and dear to a lot of our hearts. I know you had a fun weekend down here not too long ago, Julia.
Yeah, that's true.
So one of the biggest issues that we faced here was that Cowles Beach, which is sort of the crown jewel of Santa Cruz. It's sort of the beach where everyone learns how to surf that grows up here, and where the junior lifeguards practice, and where organizations such as Ride a Wave take children surfing on a certain number of weekends out of the year. It's a really beautiful beach. It's a big tourist destination, but it's been at the top of the Gila Bay's dirtiest beaches list for a long time running now. And it's kind of been a thorn in the side of the city in terms of the image that they want to project as a, you know, oceanic tourist destination. And it's also caused a lot of heartache and headaches for surfers that want to take their kids there but have serious concerns about bacteria levels in the water. So what we've done over the last 2-3 years is work with scientists up at Stanford and UC Santa Cruz. And we've had a lot of help from the city of Santa Cruz as well. They've really put their support behind it. And through, you know, different, you know, scientific methodologies, we've come to pinpoint that the big culprit that we were having a really, really hard time figuring out what it was. We knew it was fecal matter to some extent, but we didn't know where it was coming from. So we did a lot of work on all the sewage lines and, you know, the sewage treatment plan, and we were still sort of coming up empty. And it turns out the culprit has been basically pigeons and seagulls roosting underneath the wharf of Santa Cruz.
Hmm.
So pretty relatively easy fix. We've installed netting underneath the wharf last year. And since we've installed this netting that's there to deter the birds from roosting underneath there, we've seen really significant bacteria drop in the water testing that we do on a really regular basis with our partners here in the local Surfrider chapter. And we've seen those bacteria levels drop by over 50% in the last year. So we're really excited. We're really stoked on that. And we're really looking forward to next year's Gila Bay port card coming out and not seeing Cowles Beach at the top of that list.
Wow, that's such a interesting find. Has anyone else, like, there's wharfs all over the place. Has anyone else tried that method? Have you heard of putting netting under the wharf?
I think once we sort of realized that the birds were a potential culprit, that there had been case studies in the past that we were able to find where just a really simple method of putting up some deterrent netting was able to have the desired effect. I'm not sure exactly, you know, historically which wharf started it, but, you know, we're hoping our success story will be able to empower other communities to do the same thing if they're having similar issues.
Yeah, definitely.
On the subject of the World Surfing Reserve, is it the case that every area so designated has received some governmental protection, some special, you know, governmental recognition and protection, or is it the case that you can't become a World Surfing Reserve unless you've received this?
This is something that we actively work with our partners on the ground in each situation to try to receive those governmental protections. So right now in Baja, we have a World Surfing Reserve that's sort of triangulated around the islands of Todos Santos, where the big wave contest is, to just north of Coastal Ensenada, where the classic break of San Miguel is. And right now we've been working with our partners to try to establish the first state park in Baja right there at San Miguel. So as you can imagine, the bureaucracy in each country is very different, and there's different legal hoops that we have to jump through. But we've made really positive progress on there. We've had a petition campaign going for about 2 years, and everything is looking good. It's just a matter of pushing things through and having the patience to see through a project like that. We've had the most success legally and in terms of governmental recognition in our World Surfing Reserve in Huanchaco, Peru. And the federal government and the Navy, which is basically in charge of the coastline and protecting the ocean there, instituted what is called the Ley de Rompientes, the Law of the Breakers there, to basically protect the waves of Juan Chaco. So what we're seeing there, they recently had a massive proposal to install a series of jetties along the coastline there to stop the beach from deteriorating. And this was caused by a massive port just south of Juan Chaco, which is a famous historical surfing area down there. So using the Ley de Rompientes, we were able to stop this, the construction of this series of jetties, and they're actually going to be altering the mouth of the port to allow natural sand flows to occur through the port mouth, as opposed to continuing to try to, you know, just stop the natural processes of sand, you know, migration along the coastline. So through these government regulations, we're seeing, you know, real actionable results that we're very, very pleased with.
Yeah. So it's just such a cool method of work that you do. It's truly amazing. I want to bring up one other main project that Save the Waves does, and that's Surfonomics. Can you describe that a little bit? What is that word?
Yeah, most definitely. Surfonomics goes hand in hand with our World Surfing Reserves. You know, I sort of spoke earlier when I was first talking about the World Surfing Reserves about, you know, sort of the priceless experience that we have surfing these magical places. But the way the world is that we live in today, when it comes down to protecting natural resources, when you're discussing, you know, the value of a natural resource with business owners or with lawmakers, it really boils down to a dollars and cents argument. So we instituted a type of study a few years ago that we've dubbed Surfonomics, where we'll go in and basically survey local surfers, traveling surfers, people that are just coming to the beach to enjoy it, to try to put an actual valuation on economically how much money that wave and that beach is actually bringing into the local economy. And then we can take those figures and show it to the lawmakers and the local business owners and say, look, before you start any type of new development that could threaten this resource, you need to understand the value that just untouched that this natural resource is bringing into the local economy. And being able to make that argument, being able to show them that the hard numbers and cents of what, you know, financially this resource is bringing into their community, it's much easier for us to make the case against any potentially damaging developments.
Definitely. Money talks, right?
Exactly.
So it comes down to that. And I think that that's such a useful tool. Like, what are some questions that you ask people to decide that value?
How far they've traveled, how much they spend on lunch or dinner, you know, it's any number of factors. But usually the distance traveled, the amount of gas they've purchased to get there, you know, any shopping they do while they're in town. These are all figures that will go into an aggregate to define basically an average that, you know, your average surfer is going to spend per surf trip to a surf spot.
Cool. Very interesting. So, well, one more topic for you. I mean, I could go on forever with this, but you need to have fundraising yourselves to do all these really cool things. And one of those ways is to put on this film festival, which that is your main job as director. So can you tell us a little bit about the film festival, some of the films that folks might be seeing tomorrow night?
Yeah, most definitely. Just going to start with a selection of short films. And, you know, I've got one of the best, most fun jobs in the world. I basically scour the internet, work with a plethora of different international filmmakers to find what I consider to be the best, most entertaining, but also the most environmentally conscious surf films in the world. So we splice those together to basically make, you know, a mixtape of the best of what we consider has been made in the last year. So that short films program will be opening up tomorrow night. And then the feature film that's paired with is going to be filmed by De La Soul, which is called It Ain't Pretty.
Oh, tomorrow night is actually, we're showing The More Things Change.
The More Things Change.
We have showed It Ain't Pretty, though, which is also really, really amazing. But yeah, tomorrow night is The More Things Change. Hello? Can we lose him?
Oh, we lost him.
Oh, no.
That's awful.
Should we try to get him to call back in?
Yeah, hopefully he'll call back in. I'll drop this line and keep an eye on it. But
anyways.
Maybe you can,
yeah,
you
I can
talk a little
I can
bit
fill
about
it
the,
in.
Oh, wait.
Okay.
Perhaps we have him back. Hi, right, this is Cam. You're on the air. Who's this?
Hey, guys.
Okay,
it's Trey.
We got it.
Hey,
Trey.
Thanks for calling back.
No worries. Your apologies.
Well, anyways, continuing on, the more things change.
So the more things change, a great film produced by Patagonia and directed by Nate Myers, who's a longtime surf writer, journalist, and turned photographer and filmmaker. And it focuses on Jerry Lopez, the iconic Mr. Pipeline of the 70s, and sort of his evolving relationship with Uluwatu. Jerry was one of the pioneering surfers to really see the potential of Uluwatu and see what a, you know, just magic spot that is out there at the end of the Bouquet Peninsula. So it's sort of a retrospective on what he saw when he first started surfing there and what that place has turned into now. And it looks at a local nonprofit that's called Project Clean Uluwatu that has recognized sort of the dilemma of the increase in surf tourism there and the effect that's had, you know, in plastic pollution, but also the inability of the local Warungs, which is, you know, the local restaurants that are there on the bluffs overlooking Uluwatu, to handle the amount of visitors, the amount of surfers that are coming there on a daily basis. There's been a pretty heavy, just basically raw sewage problem there. So what Project Clean Uluwatu has done is design and institute a series of basically tiered gardens that all of the human waste will run through. So by the time it reaches the bottom of the cliffs there, it's completely clean water that's flowing into the ocean, as opposed to, you know, in the old days when everything would get sort of stored up, you know, in the cliffs and in the cave, and then when a big rain would wash through, there would just be a plume of raw sewage washing out into the lineup. So those guys have done an amazing job, and all the proceeds from that film that through Patagonia's production has gone to benefit that nonprofit directly. And we've been very, very proud to work with them and partner on that.
Yeah, I'm so excited to bring this film and all the shorts too, as you mentioned. Got to preview them the other day, and they are just absolutely spectacular, every single one of them. They're all like 3 to 8 minutes or something, worth over an hour, and made by like GoPro and Yeti coolers, and just, oh my gosh, so amazing, so well done. So we're really stoked to bring this to our community, and hopefully more Surfrider chapters can bring them to their communities too, as we were talking about earlier. So
Trey, if there's somebody who's interested in the Save the Waves organization, is there an online resource where they can get more information?
Yeah, most definitely. SaveTheWaves.org. That's our homepage, and you can find out more information about any of our environmental programs, as well as the Film Fest, right there. And our submission window just opened for the Film Fest as well. So if there's any filmmakers out there that are listening now and are interested in it, just SaveTheWaves.org/FilmFest. Our film submission window will be open until the end of May. So we are actively looking for next year's program right now.
Super cool. Awesome. Well, Trey, thank you again so much for taking the time to call in and talk with us today. I'd love to have you on again sometime. We could just go on forever. But yeah, thanks. And we're super excited for tomorrow night. And good luck with all your projects that you're working on. Come up and visit sometime.
Most definitely, Peter. Thank you so much for putting on the program. I know tomorrow's going to be a great success for you guys, and I hope you guys have a blast and really enjoy the films. And thank you so much for having me on the air today. I really appreciate it.
Cool, Trey. Thanks. Yeah, we appreciate your time. Thanks a ton.
You guys have a great afternoon.
You as well.
All right. Bye.
Oh, nice guy.
Yeah.
That's really it. Oh, it's amazing. I mean, if you think of, you know, you know this a little bit, how difficult it is to get governmental action just in the United States.
Yeah.
But thinking about having
difficult
to deal with all kinds of different countries,
right,
with different regimes and different rigmarole that you have to go through, I mean, that's just an enormous task. And it sounds like they're
Yeah, they're on it. They're on it. Yeah. And it's cool that they have the like grassroots, like on the ground, local component, and then they go big with the government too. So they have those two things combined.
Yeah, it's really
super
awesome.
Effective.
I hadn't heard of World Surfing Reserves before.
I know. I didn't even know about that a few years ago. I was like, what?
That's awesome.
Is amazing.
All right, cool. Well, great guest. Nice job. So remind us again about Ocean Night tomorrow.
Yeah, so tomorrow, Arcata Theater Lounge, doors open at 6:30, films start at 7. We'll have the hour of shorts, and then the more things change. And they threw in a GoPro to raffle off.
Oh, no way.
So, yeah.
Sweet. Another awesome thing. So you're raffling off a GoPro?
Yes, we are. So come out, win that. Some shirts, stickers, got a bunch of goodies, and it's going to be really good. I'm super excited for this one.
All right, Arcata Theater Lounge tomorrow night for the films and the GoPro and all the fun of Ocean Night.
Yes.
Thanks a ton. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
As always, Delia.
Definitely. Thank you.
Got it on KM. It's Radio Without the Rules. This is Katrina and the Waves.
This has been a KHUM production. For more information, check out khum.com or search KHUM in iTunes.